Welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone. I am riding solo today, so if you are here to listen to one of the awesome guests we normally have, I'm sorry, you are stuck with me for this one, but I was off last week, so there is actually a lot of news to go over, and I realized on the last show, we did a whole episode about the crowded backfields, which running backs we thought were going to have the most value in those, but we didn't talk about the other position battles that are going to happen at quarterback, at receiver, even at tight end. There's not that many at tight end, but even at tight end. So on today's show, I'm going to recap the biggest news stories over the last week or so, and then give you my thoughts on the most important position battles you need to be monitoring over the next couple months. Before we get into that, though, just a reminder, if you like what you're hearing, if you're already subscribed to the podcast on whatever podcast platform you're using, take a minute, give us a rating, give us a review on there. It helps the show expand even further. And if you've been listening for a while now, you know, we're just one of the shows on the Score Podcast Network. I highly recommend checking out some of the others like Expand the Zone, like Pound the Rock, Sweeper Keeper, Puck Pursuit. Everybody went with really creative, fun names. I kept it super boring, the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. There is no confusion what the show is about whatsoever. But if you like what you're hearing from me, I guarantee you're going to like some of those other shows as well. So give them a listen. All right, let's talk news. And if you're coming here for an escape from everyday life and all the chaos that's been going on, I'm going to apologize right now because we got to touch on a couple things off the top that are going to draw you back into the real world. And the first one is that a bunch of Cowboys and Texans have tested positive for COVID-19. This isn't the first instance of this we've seen. We've had a few reports trickle out. We know Saints head coach Sean Payton had it, Von Miller on the Broncos. This one got a little extra buzz because Ezekiel Elliott's apparently one of the players who has it, but he's asymptomatic right now. There really isn't a fantasy angle here. I'm mostly just bringing it up. We're way too far out to start speculating about how this could impact players in the season, but it is worth mentioning just to make sure that it's on your radar because unfortunately, this isn't going to be the last report we see like this over the next couple months. You can expect a ton of different players are going to come down with it. The NFL has huge rosters compared to some of these other sports. You got to remember that. But fortunately for the NFL, they're in a position to sit back right now and see how things go for these other leagues like NBA and NHL. A few of the European soccer leagues have started back up. Maybe even MLB, if they can come to an agreement, which today, I'm recording this on Wednesday, it sounds like maybe they're going to be able to pull that off. And depending how those leagues unfold, we're going to have a better idea by midsummer or so where the NFL stands and how the season's going to be impacted by all of this. My neighbor has Lions season tickets. I highly doubt that he's going to be in the stands for those games, but we'll see. I don't want to be pessimistic yet. We don't know where this is going to be in a couple months, but right now I'd be guessing that we're going to have severely reduced stadiums or maybe no fans in the stands at all. Next up, Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn said Colin Kaepernick is on his team's emergency workout list and should be on others as well. He also said that they haven't reached out to Kaepernick, though, and that they don't have plans right now to bring him in, so we shouldn't get too excited by this, but it is a positive sign. Teams seem a little more open now to the idea of signing Kaepernick. Kaepernick deserves to be on an NFL roster. He always deserved to be on an NFL roster. He might not warrant a starting job. We don't know where he's at right now. We'll have to see him once he gets back in the field. He had that brief little workout last year. We don't know where he stands as far as NFL quarterbacks go right now, but he definitely could serve as a backup on one of these teams. Some of the guys who are filling out roster spots right now in the NFL, they don't belong there. Kaepernick is better than them. It probably won't have an impact on redraft leagues if he gets signed unless there's injuries in front of him on the depth chart, but dynasty owners, 2QB super flex leagues, you might want to do a preemptive pickup here and get him on your bench. Elsewhere, the Vikings offense coordinator Gary Kubiak, he confirmed that first round receiver Justin Jefferson is going to move inside to the slot quite a bit. It's worth mentioning because that's where Jefferson did most of his damage in college, and really that's his best path to success in the pros. So it gives him a better shot at fantasy relevance right out of the gate in his first season. I still have him as a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, but he has some upside. He could sneak up into that wide receiver 3 range if he can carve out enough targets. It's going to be tough in that Vikings offense. It's going to be run heavy still. And I suppose I should bring up the Dalvin Cook holdout news because I was off last week. I'm not worried too much about Cook just yet. I bumped him down slightly to RB5. I still have him as a mid to late first round pick. And that boils down to he doesn't have very much leverage. I expect that there's going to be a deal reached. I know some of the Vikings beat writers have suggested, you know, every year they kind of sign one extension, or it seems to be the case where they end up signing an extension right before training camp. Maybe we'll see that here. I understand Dalvin Cook saying this. He's trying to exercise whatever leverage he has, but there is not much, especially with the wording in the new CBA, that he really has to show up for training camp now. So I expect the deal to be reached maybe closer to that 10 to 13 million a year range. So let's not overreact right now. Alexander Mattison should already have been at the top of your elite backups list. I've talked about him before. He's an RB1 if Cook sits out or if Cook gets hurt. And Cook hasn't been the healthiest so far in his NFL career. So even if he does play this season, even if he does report, there's a good chance we could see Mattison get a few starts. That's why I have Mattison inside my top 100 picks in redraft. Going back to the Jefferson thing quick, though, because I do want to touch on Adam Thielen. It kind of hurts Adam Thielen just a little bit. Thielen played 32% of his snaps from the slot last year. He feasts on that interior coverage. Don't get me wrong, though. I am not worried about Thielen in the slightest. I don't think it's great for him, but this is a guy, he can bounce back. He's going to get a ton of volume this year, and that's going to propel him to a top 15 fantasy campaign. This is a guy that had 8 straight 100-yard games 2 years ago. I know some people are a little worried about the health. He had that bad hamstring injury last year. He's getting up there. I mean, he's not over 30 yet, though. He's only 29. He's going to turn 30 later this year, so I'm not that worried about him. And I was thinking about Thielen recently when it comes to Dynasty. I was actually trying to trade for him unsuccessfully, but I was trying to trade for him because he's the type of receiver who I believe is going to maintain his value well into his 30s. He has that skill set where he can adapt. It kind of reminds me, you know, like Larry Fitzgerald, where he can continue to produce well into his 30s, adjust his game to still be a quality fantasy asset and extend his career. But like I said, right now, he's only 29, so we're not really worried about that. It was just something I've been thinking about recently, and I figured it was worth mentioning. Somebody who's going to have trouble as he gets older here is going to be Alshon Jeffery, and maybe he's going to have trouble even this season producing because he's been in the news. They do not have a timetable for his return to action yet. He's coming back from the Lisfranc injury. And if you're one of the people who asked me why I have him so low in my rankings this year, this is why. This has been why, because we aren't sure if he's going to be available early in the season. I've been leaning towards him sitting out the start of the year, maybe even being put on PUP. Doug Peterson, his coach, basically confirmed that. He acknowledged that Jeffery could miss a few games at the start of the year. It seems like most medical experts in the fantasy community are worried about Jeffery as well. I have him all the way down at wide receiver 75. So basically, that's off my draft board pretty much. He's not someone that I'm going to end up with on very many teams, if any. And part of that is because even when he is healthy, we don't know how he'll do. Foot injuries can linger. He'll also be dealing with more target competition. You have DeSean Jackson back healthy. They drafted Jalen Reagor, Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, Miles Sanders. All these guys are going to be vying for targets. And Jeffery hasn't had a 1,000-yard season since 2014. That seems like so long ago, but he hasn't. He's been getting by on high touchdown totals. And the more weapons you add to this offense, the harder it's going to be for him to produce those big numbers around the red zone. And even a guy like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who last year looked like a bit of a bust, reports have come out that he was playing hurt last season, so maybe we'll see a little more from him this year. So this is a guy, Jeffery, I do not want to have on any of my teams. We also got some bad news out of Philadelphia that star guard Brandon Brooks will miss the season. This is a big one. I'm working on our offensive line rankings right now. This will move Philly down quite a bit, unfortunately, unless they can find some sort of replacement for him. And no one is going to completely replace him, but I've seen some people suggest they could bring back veteran tackle Jason Peters, ask him to move inside. They could go after a free agent like Larry Warford's still out there. There's a couple options that at least might mitigate some of the loss. So keep an eye on what they do there. For now, though, I'm not bumping down Miles Sanders or Carson Wentz. Let's see how they try to fill that role first. And the last piece of news that I want to talk about, we got word last week, it was when I was off, that Sony Michel is recovering from foot surgery. It's not great for a player that we already had some doubts about surrounding, you know, durability and overall production. I had Michel tabbed as a potential sleeper option this year, though, just because he's going so late in fantasy drafts. He's going to be even cheaper now, so if I liked him before, depending how this injury works out, maybe I'll even have more of him now. But if you look a little further, it seems like this is being called more of a maintenance-type surgery, that it's not some huge deal. It's still not what you want to hear, don't get me wrong, but not something that's expected to keep him out for a long stretch. It's possible that he's going to start training camp on the sidelines. We'll have to see. So if you don't want to invest in him, I wouldn't blame you at all. I see all the doubts. I see all the concerns. But depending on his recovery, where his ADP ends up, I might still be willing to have a few shares. I wasn't a huge fan of Damian Harris as a prospect. He definitely becomes a little more interesting now as a late round flyer. This also solidifies James White's volume in that offense. I think, you know, his role was pretty secure before. This only helps him. Overall, you know you're taking a chance on having to deal with a headache if you're rostering any of these Patriots backs. It's been that way for a long time, but I wouldn't overreact to this Michel news just yet, because it's not like we're talking about an early round fantasy pick. He's going off the board in the 8th, 9th, 10th round. There's really no risk in that range. You can still take a shot on him at that point just because of the numbers he could put up. I know he's probably not going to be involved in the receiving game very much, but he could still put up 900, 1,000 yards, and a decent touchdown total if that offense can come together. And we'll talk a little bit more about the Patriots in a second here. All right, let's shift gears and talk about some of those key position battles at the other spots that aren't running back, because we talked about them on the last show. I encourage you to go back and listen, there was a ton of info in there. I think we talked about more than 2/3 of the backfields across the league, covered every team that had some uncertainty on their depth chart. Today, like I said off the top, I'm going to focus on quarterback, wide receiver, and tight end, because normally in June, we'd have OTAs at this point. We'd have already seen rookie camps and full team workouts. There'd be a ton of information trickling out that we'd be able to react to. This year, totally different. We aren't getting those organized team practices. Instead, they're meeting up on Zoom calls, going over playbooks. We have groups of players still getting together on their own without coaches. We've seen a lot of those videos on social media. A Big Ben throwing to his skill position players. Josh Allen getting most of the Bills offense together. I thought it was kind of interesting. He had an earpiece in his ear hooked up to his cell phone, and he had offensive coordinator Brian Daboll calling in the plays over the phone to him while he had all the players lined up. That's an interesting way to get it done. I think Lamar Jackson had a similar kind of a grouping where he brought all the guys together. Lots of that stuff's happening right now, but it's not the same. These aren't usual practices where media's hanging around and we're getting those drips of information. So since we're missing that portion of the NFL calendar right now, I want to go over some of those position battles that would normally be developing during OTAs and give you my thoughts on how I project them playing out, on what I think it means for fantasy, because the sooner we can get a handle on that, the better equipped you're going to be for your drafts, especially if you're doing best ball drafts right now or FC Eliminators or Scott Fishbowl's coming up, any of the early fantasy drafts taking place over the next couple months. You want to be able to have a good feel about how these position battles are going to break down. So let's start at quarterback. And I want to start with the Bears, because I think of all the position battles that we have at quarterback, the Bears one is at least one that could potentially produce if one of these guys could step up. We've seen Mitch Trubisky in the past. When he was running a couple years ago, he had some decent games for fantasy. We've seen Nick Foles produce in the past. Whether they're going to do it this year, I don't know. I mean, I've mentioned the Foles-Trubisky battle a few times over the offseason. In May, we had Matt Nagy say both QBs are going to get time with the starters during the preseason. Then more recently, Trubisky said he's motivated by the team trading for Foles, said he was pissed off in a good way. I hope so, Mitch. The team traded for your replacement. Really, I mean, when you look at this from the Bears organization, this is a win-win for them. Either Trubisky channels all of that frustration and anger and improves, or Foles overtakes him on the depth chart, or neither work out, which probably means you lose this season, which isn't great, but at least at that point, you'll know you need to draft a QB next year and maybe have to overhaul that front office a little bit as well. I don't project that either is going to put up huge numbers. I don't think we're talking about a guy who's going to be a QB1 in fantasy, no matter who wins this job. But Foles brings the kind of leadership that I'm not sure Trubisky has shown so far with this team. So whether it's week one or early in the season, I expect that Foles is going to be the one under center. Neither is much of a real fantasy option outside of 2QB or super flex leagues. For the record, though, and I mentioned the FC Eliminators briefly, that's a 17-team league. I just took Foles out. He dropped a little bit. It's a unique setup in those leagues. It's 17 teams, but basically it's 16-man best ball rosters where you can play two quarterbacks per week. The lowest score gets eliminated each week. And quarterbacks went off the board really early. So my second QB, I waited. I grabbed Foles at a value. I got Cam Newton much later. I think Cam Newton's somebody whose value could go way up. I think I got him as like the QB 35 or something. If he signs somewhere, we're going to see his value skyrocket. It's a risky way to play it, I admit that. But I'm trying to find an edge in such a big format. And I think Foles could be a very cheap option there. So keep an eye on him in best ball leagues. See where he's going off the board. I wouldn't be investing in Trubisky. And in that same league, Trubisky went several rounds after Foles. So no one's that excited about that Bears quarterback spot for fantasy. The Patriots also have an unsettled depth chart. And I said I'd bring them up a second ago. Well, here it is. It seems like Jarrett Stidham is going to be the guy. But if he isn't up to the task, you have veteran Brian Hoyer there. He knows the offense really well. There's also a possibility this could be a landing spot for somebody like Cam Newton. He'd have to sign a very team-friendly deal to get it done because I don't think they have that much cap space. It might be a bit of a longer shot at this point because all the reports coming out are that the team just loves Stidham. I've talked about this before. I kind of like Stidham as a deep sleeper as well for fantasy. He's got underrated mobility, so he's going to pick up some yards with his legs. I also don't mind that receiving core as much as others. Julian Edelman, such a reliable veteran guy. You have him already working out with Stidham. He knows how important that relationship's going to be. You have James White, a reliable option out of the backfield. N'Keal Harry, a first-round pick just last year. He was injured most of his rookie season. I know all the talk that if a receiver doesn't produce in that first year, the guys who haven't put up very big stats that first year don't tend to overcome that. But when it's somebody who had an injury, I'm willing to give him a bit of a pass. He'll have a chance to get up to speed in this offense now with the full offseason. Hopefully, he'll have a little bit of chemistry with Stidham after the two worked together last year in rookie camps, in practice. And then you have two rookie tight ends in Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene, which should be an upgrade on last year's no-name group. Sorry, Matt Lacoste, but it should be an upgrade on that group. Even if it's a small upgrade, we're still talking about an improvement. And then to fill that third receiver spot, you have a mixture of Mohamed Sanu and Marquise Lee and Damir Bird, Jacoby Myers. There's going to be some good competition there to get a third and fourth receiver. I know the void of losing Tom Brady is making people think that this situation is worse than it actually is, but I have faith in Bill Belichick. I have faith in Josh McDaniels. They're going to find a way, just like they did all those other times when Brady was out of the lineup, whether it was Matt Castle or Jimmy Garoppolo or Jacoby Brissett. In each of those occasions, they found ways to win. They found ways to generate offense. I think Stidham's going to surprise some people this year. He's still in that quarterback 3 fantasy range, but he's got a shot at quarterback 2 numbers. And same thing as Foles. He's going off the board so late that there is zero risk, but he's still someone you're only going to look at if you're in 2QB or super flex formats. Let's move on to receivers now. There's a few teams that have that number one job up for grabs. I want to talk about them mostly. The Texans, they have to replace DeAndre Hopkins after Bill O'Brien lost his mind and traded him away. The truth is, there really is no replacing Hopkins. We're not going to lie about that. We're not going to dance around that. You can't replace DeAndre Hopkins. They've even pretty much admitted as much that they want to spread the ball around more, that there might not be that one guy hogging all the work at this point. But somebody's going to lead this team in receiving, and it's going to be whoever stays healthier out of Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks. And we had Dr. Edwin Porras on a few weeks back, and he talked about the outlooks for both guys in that episode. But the reality is, it's hard to have confidence in either staying on the field for full 16 games. So if you draft them, you're going to capitalize when they're in the lineup, but you got to be ready to pivot when they sit out. For me, if I'm picking between the two, I'll take the cheaper option. And right now, Fuller's going off the board in the early 7th. Cooks is getting a bit of a discount in the late 8th. So give me Cooks, less risk, you know, 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons before last year. It gets a quarterback upgrade going from Jared Goff to Deshaun Watson. But these two are very close in my rankings. They're not much separating them. Big weeks are going to be coming, and you just got to be prepared for life without them at some point this season if you're going to take a chance with either of them. The Giants' number one receiver, even ranking the Giants receivers right now, is just an absolute nightmare. You got Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard, and Golden Tate. I could make a pretty good argument for any of these guys ending the year as the top option in that receiving corps. Slayton outproduced that 5th round draft slot, posted 48 grabs, 740 yards, and 8 touchdowns as a rookie. He's got the most buzz in the fantasy community right now. Then you have Shepard, who seemed to be the heir apparent going into last year, thought he was going to get the number one job, and his numbers did rise every season before injuries threw him off last year. And now there's some serious concern, concussions, there's some worry. Is he going to be able to stay on the field? And the truth is, the best value in this group right now, and maybe one of the better values in all fantasy drafts right now, is Golden Tate, who's going off the board outside of the top 50 receivers, outside of the top 10 rounds. I got him as the wide receiver 58 in that FC Eliminator recently. He only appeared in 11 games last year, but in those 11 games, he was on pace for 71 catches, 983 yards, and 9 touchdowns over a full 16-game schedule. That would have made him the wide receiver 18 on the year. Now, with everyone healthy, I'm not expecting him to reach that kind of ceiling, but he's definitely more valuable than wide receiver 51, which is exactly what his ADP is. And he's the one I'm aiming to draft most out of those three guys, but they're all worthwhile targets from the 8th to the 11th round, which is where their ADPs are now. Some other quick hitters here. I'll just run through them fast. The Chiefs' number 2 wideout, so the battle there is between Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman. I'm taking the upside of Hardman, how efficient he was last year versus how much Watkins disappointed. I'm not letting those Watkins playoff numbers sway me. Hardman is the future here. He very well might be the present number 2 as well. We could see him open the season getting more work than Watkins. In Baltimore, give me Miles Boykin as the most likely to break out as the Ravens' number 2 over Devin Duvernay, over Willie Snead. The thing is with these guys, they essentially play different positions. You have Snead being purely a slot guy. You have Duvernay being my choice to assume that starting slot role over Snead. And then you have Boykin starting on the outside opposite Marquise Brown. So the real life battle here is really going to be between Duvernay and Snead. But I like Boykin for his touchdown upside. He could have double digit scores. That's the kind of ceiling he has in this offense. It makes me think, I know it's a completely different position, but it makes me think of Eric Ebron a couple years ago, where he was in a decent offense with the Colts and he had that big ceiling, even though the yardage wasn't that big because he's a tight end and he's not one of the elite tight ends. He was able to hit double digit touchdowns. It wouldn't shock me if we see something like that happen for Boykin, even if his yardage remains a little lower. Duvernay, really intriguing, has a very versatile skill set as a receiver, even has enough speed to go on the outside if they want him to do that. We know they were excited to get him as well. Both Boykin and Duvernay, they're late round dart throws. You want to get pieces of good offenses, and guess what? That Ravens offense is going to put up a lot of points. In Carolina, I'm not really interested in investing in Robbie Anderson or Curtis Samuel. If I was forced to choose, I'd take Anderson, even though the skill set doesn't, you know, mesh perfectly with Teddy Bridgewater. But the reality here is DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, they're going to soak up most of the targets in that offense. You have a young tight end in Ian Thomas. He's also going to eat into things there. So Anderson and Samuel, I expect them to be kind of inconsistent options, and picking the week where they go off is going to be frustrating. So they're not really players that I want on my redraft roster. I would say the same about the Packers receivers behind Davante Adams. It's kind of a stay away for me. Alan Lazard is a little bit intriguing, but he didn't produce much with the opportunities he was given last year. And now he has to contend with a healthy Adams leading the way. And then you also have Devin Funchess joining the team. You have Marcus Valdes-Scantling, who some of the coaches have talked up recently. Some others like Jay Sternberger at tight end. He could be fighting for targets. And on top of it all, we're being given the impression that Matt LaFleur wants to run the ball more, and we might have a disgruntled and potentially declining Aaron Rodgers running that system as well. So while I absolutely love Adams, I think he could finish as the number one overall fantasy receiver. I'm not nearly as bullish on any of the other receivers in that receiving core, but Alan Lazard would be my pick to emerge as the top one of that bunch. The Colts' number two job, it's the last one that I'll talk about amongst receivers. Behind T.Y. Hilton, you got two guys who I like a lot individually, but since they ended up on the same team, they're going to cannibalize each other here. It's Paris Campbell, Michael Pittman Jr. I like them so much as prospects. I also question the upside, though, because there's just so many mouths to feed, not just between the two of them, but in this offense as a whole. We have Frank Reich talking up all of the running backs. He's got three running backs that he thinks are going to finish in the top 10 this season, if you believe what he's saying. And that includes Nyheim Hines, who's going to be this pass-catching weapon, who at one point Reich said, you know, Nyheim Hines could catch 10 balls in a game. I don't know if that's going to happen all the time. I don't know if that's exactly what he meant, but it means that Hines is going to remain involved. We have Jack Doyle and Trey Burton at tight end. I've talked before about how much Phillip Rivers favors his tight ends. And then you have Hilton atop the depth chart. So while I wish I had more shares of Campbell and Pittman in Dynasty, because I feel like they're going to be the future of this offense once Hilton steps aside, I'm not sure I really want to invest in either of them at this point in redraft leagues. They're more just late round dart throws that I'm going to stash at the end of my bench to see if they can jump up early in the season and not really breakout candidates like I'd maybe hoped for them before. And at tight end, there aren't many position battles where we could have real fantasy value emerge. I'm not interested in, you know, any of the Bears' 10 tight ends they have on the roster. The Redskins depth chart, I know it's wide open, but there isn't any tight ends worth investing in there, in my opinion, for fantasy. The one spot, though, where I'm kind of intrigued is Arizona. And now this one is very, very deep, but there's a decent amount of talk around Dan Arnold. And I mentioned him, if you went and read my Super Deep Sleepers column a couple weeks ago, I talked about him in there. That's one where I just love writing that article every year because I'm looking at guys who are way off the fantasy radar at this point in the season, but who might step up as the year moves along, depending how things fall. And there's reason to think that Arnold could be a factor in this offense. The Cardinals didn't add any tight ends, at least any tight ends of note over the offseason. And that was after they brought in Arnold off waivers in December, and he finished the year in a really big way. Had that huge game, four catches, 76 yards and a score. And then a little more recently, you have Good Morning Football's Peter Schrager. He cited somebody inside the Cardinals organization that told him that Arnold's going to be a key part of that offense this year. I know it's not that much to go on, but this is an offense on the rise. This is an offense that we expect to put up big points. Kyler Murray could take another leap forward this year. You have DeAndre Hopkins, who is going to eat up some targets, but DeAndre Hopkins is also going to help this offense score more, also going to help this offense put up more yards. So why not grab potential starters in Arizona, especially when you're talking about a 6'6" red zone threat at tight end? He doesn't cost anything. He's a last-round flyer, even an early-season waiver wire pickup. But keep an eye out for how he performs in training camp and the preseason. Keep his name on your watch list. And that is all for today's show. Go and check out the Score Fantasy Football Draft Kit. You can find that for free on the Score app. I know there are a lot of quality fantasy draft kits out there, but there's only one that has the most accurate rankings in the industry, and it doesn't cost you anything to access it. So bookmark that because we keep it updated daily all the way up until week one. I'll be back next week with a mailbag episode, but until then, big thanks to everybody who's participating in that FC Eliminator I talked about a couple times on the show. The proceeds of that go to charity, and big thanks to John Bosch for organizing the whole thing. He does a great job with that. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening today, and we will see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby, said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight, said leave on time.